Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. Also, before I get to the rest of today's episode, I'd like to give another huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who've supported me over at patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine. So, a huge thank you to Mr. Big Bence, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S., Infamous Fridge, and my newest patron, Frugal Brutal, for supporting me. If you'd like to help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine for more information. And today's episode of the podcast is going to be a really interesting episode where I dive a little bit more into some of the jank brewing concepts that I typically like to lay my hat on, you know, just building a lot of interesting decks out of kind of unusual shells. And we've got a new Kindred Spirit and a new awesome guest to bring onto the show today. So I'd like to introduce Lenny Woolley, EDH contributor and one quarter of the Scrap Trawlers. Welcome to the show, Lenny.
Thank you very much for having me. And I just also have to say, like, your patron list is so star-studded. You have amazing people in that list.
Oh, thank you. They're awesome people. But since you're the guest on here, how about you introduce yourself to the folks out there who haven't come across your content just yet?
Oh, yes, of course. So you can find my articles every other Thursday, not this one, but the next one, on edhrec.com. It is a website that you may have heard of, best deck building resource on the internet. My article series is called Power Sync, and what I do is I take commanders that, well, that people just kind of don't like. I take the Urzas and the Chulanes, and it's the ones that people are afraid of, and I give them weird, janky decks to kind of showcase other things that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also find you can also find
my bad.
Sorry, my content list is it's fine. My content list is long. You can find me on the Scrap Trawlers on Sundays, multiple Sundays. We brew budget EDH, usually around a theme. And then you can also find me, if you like Dungeons & Dragons, on the first Monday of every month doing Path and Prophecy, a Theros-themed game run by Sage of Fables. That's on the Venture Maidens Twitch channel, and the VODs show up on the Mind Sculptors YouTube channel.
Very, very cool. You got a lot of content going out there and a lot of really cool things going on in the community. Sounds real great.
Thank you.
Okay, so I know that last week or a couple weeks ago, I had Cole from the Uncommon Commanders podcast on to talk about commander loudness. And we were trying to find a good definition for exactly how you consider a loud commander, but we were in somewhat consensus that loudness is technically determined by how much value a card basically has stapled to it. And again, today is going to be sort of a part two, I suppose, if you want to look at it that way, about trying to take very quote-unquote busted or value-centric commanders and trying to tone them down for the more casual EDH tables. And again, Lenny, you do have a dedicated series to this where you do take those extremely powerful, extremely popular commanders for very good reasons, and you try to kind of tone them down a little bit, find some interesting new strategies to play around with, and just take some of the bite out of some of these extremely feared commanders. And and I wanted to kind of get us started off today by just asking you where you came up with that particular idea for that particular series. Because while this is something that I and I know some other brewers out there have been trying to do for a while now, it's not necessarily commonplace for people to try to take these popular commanders and tone them down. Most of the time, people seem to optimize up. So I guess I'm just curious where the inspiration really came for that first.
Well, originally the inspiration came from my friend Ryan Sullivan, a great person. He runs a game club in a high school game club out in South Dakota. And it just kind of came from a random tweet where he was talking about like taking commanders like that and just kind of powering down. So it's kind of like his idea initially. And then he had talked about doing it like if you only ran uncommons and commons. And so from that, because I had talked to him in a direct message about, oh, I think I actually might be able to do this with like an Urza deck, just to prove that I could. And so that was the genesis. This was back in like 2020, in the summer of 2020. And that was the genesis of one of my signature decks, Urza's Gumball Machine, and that was the subject of the first article.
Yeah, so again, I've had the opportunity to play against the Urza's Gumball Machine, but for people who are unaware of exactly what that deck is trying to do, could you give us a quick walkthrough of exactly what that deck is looking to do and how it differs from what you would consider what EDH rec, especially would consider Urza's average deck to be?
All right, so the first starting point on my deck, the Gumball Machine, this is a shout out to the Commander's Brew podcast, who would always call cards that are worth 25 cents. They'd say it's a gumball. So the cards are all 25 cents or less, and I'm only using commons and uncommons. And what the deck seeks to do is flood the board with a bunch of just artifacts with middling value or like low value. And then use those to power up Urza's constructs to attack for combat damage. I was able to sneak an infinite combo in the deck, but we don't have time to explain that.
Combos in an Urza Lord High Artificer deck?
I
Nonsense,
know,
right?
I'm shocked. But so going from there, playing the deck, I started playing it with like the people I trust, and then I had a lot of fun playing it, and they had a lot of fun playing against it. And so that kind of became a signature deck. And eventually that led to the genesis of that whole idea because I had toyed around with some other ideas. And I have a couple other decks just in general that are similar. Like I have an Atraxa group hug list. And it's sort of, I enjoyed the idea of taking these really powerful commanders and just messing with some other things that they could do. And since then I've had like a lot of time to think about like what the benefits of that are.
And what would you consider some of those benefits to be, per se?
Well, we were talking a little bit earlier pre-recording about the Urza's Gumball Machine. Is that deck is You can buy that deck for less than $60 on TCG Player. And Urza is pretty much the vast majority of that cost. So powerful commanders like that are really good to build budget decks around because you don't have to run the best cards. You can just kind of run what's in your collection, and you will get a lot farther if you need to than, say, just like a less powerful commander. So that's certainly, I think, a good option if you're looking at a budget.
Yeah, that's definitely
But
an interesting way to think about it because I do like personally trying to build around things in my collection and trying to find homes for, I guess, misfit cards, if we want to say that, is has always been something that I enjoy, is finding that one place where some random common or uncommon actually can shine in a other where otherwise it might just be sitting in the back of the bulk bin. So being able to have a commander that allows you to basically scale what you want to get out of it, the optimization of that deck is definitely something that I think needs to be said more when we're talking about these powerful commanders.
oh yeah, definitely. Just going back to the Urza list, being excited about playing a card like Team Pennant. And if you don't know what Team Pennant does, I'll tell you now. It's a one mana equipment that gives a creature +1/+1 vigilance and trample, and it has equip creature token 1. It also has equip 3, but I don't see a lot of decks really wanting to run a card like this in Commander. But it's like perfect for my deck because I'm trying to swing with giant tokens that need evasion, and then I can actually just use tap the Team Pennant to pay its cost. It's like a perfect card for that. So it's like a place you can find a home for these like bizarre cards that just wouldn't show up anywhere else.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Fitz's Merit Lage deck, where that would honestly be quite perfect if that card. I'm not sure if that card has trample already, but that sounds perfect for that deck. Now that I
It
think about
doesn't, and we should hopefully he listens to this and puts it in there. All right, Fitz. Team
it.
Pennant.
Team Pennant in the Secret Merit Lage commander deck with Temet, I believe, is the commander of that one. But
Yeah, that's Temet.
yeah, I have played against that deck, or it seems like I've played against. Have I? Well, if I haven't played against that deck, I'm gonna have to make sure I get in the arena and fight Fitz at some point and ask to play that deck. But yeah, I've seen it in action a couple times. Pretty cool. And Team Pennant just seems like the kind of thing that Marillage, you know, just what more do you need a +1/+1 for when you have a 2020 flyer or 2020 giant ice creature thing on board? Anywho, I digress again. I had that happens a lot, so whatever. And I also wanted to bring up my own version of, I guess, Urza's Gumball Machine. I'm sure everyone who's been listening to this podcast for long enough is probably sick of me talking about this, but it was really the emphasis for us having this conversation. And that is my five color colorless Najeela deck, where my good friend Mono Whiteboarder, aka Peter, challenged me to try to build a Najeela deck utilizing only colorless lands. And I am happy to say that I actually pulled that off. And I am running 30, well, it looks like 32 lands. It seems a little low, but whatever. And I'm running 32 lands, none of which actually provide colored mana on their own. There are some color filtering lands, you know, Cascading Cataracts is in there. I do run Painted Bluffs, et cetera, which do allow me to filter, and a lot of mana rocks. But the idea is I wanted to take an extremely busted commander, because again, Najeela is extremely powerful, very popular commander, very good CEDH commander especially. And I wanted to try to bring that down more to the level of where some of my other decks are. And she's scary at no matter really how you build that deck. So by only putting in colorless lands and by putting in a bunch of mana rocks, I gave myself a fairly, I guess, fragile framework to try to be able to activate Najeela's ability. So I'm not going to be able to go infinite with this. The goal is to try to be able to get one, maybe two extra combats if I'm lucky, but jump through so many hoops that I can't just kill the entire table in one turn. And that was really my response to this whole kind of challenge. Again, independent from talking with you about this, Lenny, but it seems like we're kind of on the same page here, is we've both taken extremely popular, extremely broken commanders in their own right, and have tried to find a way to just really bring them down to a different level so that they're not so optimized.
Yeah, I do want to say that, like, if I think it's totally fine if people want to optimize these commanders, like, especially, you know, if they're being upfront about it, and just being, hey, this is fully optimized Najeela, so, you know, bring something appropriate. There's nothing wrong with that. Like,
No,
that
there
is
isn't.
also a fun way to play. But I think what happens is a lot of these commanders get kind of people get so focused on that reputation that we're losing out on a lot of cool decks that could exist if, you know, people were more willing to, I guess, separate the cardboard and what it can do from their experience playing against it in decks. I get a lot of people talking about that, like from comments and stuff on my articles, where they talk about, like, oh yeah, like, you know, they played against, it's not that Narset, and then it turns out it is that Narset, and that's just an awful thing that does still happen in our community, and we do need to be better about that. But I think that doesn't necessarily mean that, like, we shouldn't be trying to find other things that we could do with Narset, and that's kind of what I'm trying to do with my article series, is to show people that there's, like, more out there that we could be doing with these commanders, and also hopefully to give people like you and me, or people who want to try stuff like that, a bit more of a vocabulary to discuss what they're doing. Because I think the other side is that people will just be say, this comes out constantly, and I'm sure you've heard this too, is like, well, if you're just doing that, like, people are just going to target you anyway. Or they'll say, I don't care what you're playing, like, you know, if you're playing this commander, I don't care what you tell me, I'm just going to target you out of the game, which is not fun. Like, and me personally, I feel like that's sort of blatantly ignoring the rule zero conversation on the side of the person doing that. If somebody tells you they're trying to play it a fair deck, I feel like you should take them at face value. And if they're wrong about that, or if they're wrong, be understanding and give a person space to be wrong. and say, hey, okay, yeah, that was more powerful than I expected, and I apologize for that experience. But like, if they actually are just lying to you, then you just treat them like you treat people who do that kind of thing to you.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And again, I always come back to the same example where I used to have a Kess Dissonant Mage deck, and it got so hated out of a game just because I had Kess in the command zone that I was basically stung for a long time trying to build these commanders. And it's only really been the recently last few months where I've started to try to come back in and take on some of these more popular commanders as a personal challenge to try to do some interesting things. And it's interesting that you bring up the Rule Zero conversation there, Lenny, because every time I do play Najila, and again, I'm going to preface this by saying that I only bring Najila out to willing pods who basically have already know what I'm going to be doing. So again, this is not a deck that I play very often. It's kind of I guess, a meme at some point, because I know there's a lot of people out there who still hate Najila and just would try to beat the crap out of me, honestly. If I brought this to most tables. So I try to pick my spots when it comes to this deck, but it's one of those things where I always mention from the outset at Rule Zero that this is a colorless deck, effectively, where all my lands can only provide that colorless on tap. And, there are some filter lands, et cetera, but I'm not trying to go overly fast here. This is kind of me just trying to build up for maybe, again, two extra combats a turn. If I'm extremely lucky, one, I'm happy with one. If I can get two, great. But I just love being able to try to slow down this strategy, make sure it's a what I would consider a more casual, slower game, and make it very upfront from the moment I sit down with that card, with that deck, that everyone knows exactly what I'm going to be doing, and that I have basically nerfed it in a way, but that I did so willingly. And that's the important thing here, is it all comes back down to intent. What do you intend to do with this deck? There's really no point in me lying to say that this is not that Najila deck, because if I wanted to build Najila, I would build Najila, but I saw this as being a personal challenge, trying to take it on. And I'm really happy with how it came out, because it's one of those decks that I just really enjoy talking about, because it really catches people off guard. I know that I've gotten a lot of people just wondering why I built this, but once I play it, they start thinking, hey, that's a really cool deck that you have there, MJ. It's definitely very different than we've seen before, and in some cases, this is probably the fairest Najila deck that we're ever going to see. Because it's not trying to do something busted powerful. It's gonna hang around, but it's just kind of doing its own thing. It's not going to blow any of us out of the water. And that's really what I wanted to get out of it. The intent was there to make it an extremely casual deck that still does some cool things, but just, bring it down to a more manageable level, slow it down, and just, try to have a social game where this really is the social point. I want to make sure that we have a conversation, not just about Rule Zero, but just the social conversation in EDH while we're playing is, hey, that's a really cool deck you have there. How does it work? Well, I'll show you. And then that starts the conversation there. And that's one of the things I really enjoy about EDH the most, is really surprising people and making them excited about what you're playing, because they haven't seen it before.
Yeah, I think self-expression is kind of like the core of what you're saying there. And just showing, and honestly wanting to show people a good time.
And again, there are so many ways I could improve this deck, but I made a conscious decision to not do that. And you're right. It does come back down to that Rule Zero conversation, is that you just have to be careful. You have to pick your spots sometimes, but if you can find the right group, then this can definitely go far. I mean, I'm running some lands in here that have really zero things to do with this deck. But again, they all had colorless in their mana values, so I ran them. There's no point, but I'm still doing it anyway.
Yeah, and it's like fun for you, and honestly, like it's fun for the pod too. Like at least me personally, and I think there are a lot of people that look at it this way that having or playing against unusual decks is part of the fun of Commander for quite a few people.
I know
So
that we had
it's
that game a few weeks ago where you and I faced off with our strange themed decks, and it was pretty fun.
Oh yeah, it's really fun. And then like at least for me, one of the things that I like to do as a brewer is I try to shoot for having a deck that is the deck that other people go and they tell their friends about. And I think taking that and just subverting people's expectations is a great way to get that kind of thing. So if you're thinking like, hey, that sounds like a good time to me, like I want to impress my friends and strangers at the LDS with a weird deck. Try subverting their expectations with an overpowered commander.
I could not agree more with that sentiment. It's something that I've definitely, I know that you have done a lot, Lenny, but I've also tried to do a lot more recently as well. I have a couple more decks that run, or at least a couple of deck concepts that I at least started trying to build around commanders that have a lot of decks and seem to want to do one thing, but trying to subvert those expectations and try to do something completely different with them. Typically, I will, and I did touch on this in my episode a little while back about talking about my deck building style. So, if you're interested in hearing more from me about how I personally build my decks, you should definitely check out that episode. It's really awesome, and I think maybe you'll learn a new way to evaluate cards from that. I don't know, but again, I do enjoy going on EDH Rec and finding a popular commander, and then just going to the bottom of the theme page. And, that little drop down that you have in there, going all the way to the bottom of there, and just see what maybe has like 4, 5 to 10 decks on the website. Then basically start thinking, how can I start using some of the cards in my collection to try to build this exact deck? And, just try to subvert those expectations. So I'll give another example. I do have Anja Falkenrath, who is notorious for Madness and for the World Gorger combo. And I decided to throw all of that out and create some weird Rakdos Reanimator deck where I just try to throw a whole bunch of really big beaters into the graveyard and then be able to reanimate them to do massive damage. And it's just a deck where I do run some Madness, I run some Cycling. You don't typically see a lot of Cycling cards in those sorts of decks, but I'm running that anyway. And instead of being one of 2,200 or 2,300 decks on the EDH rec doing only Madness, I'm running about 8 to 10-ish Madness cards, and each one of them has an exact place in that deck. Most of them are removal, they're creatures I want to have on the battlefield, they're just effects that I want to use. I'm not just trying to churn through the deck by running as many Madness cards as I can possibly can. I have a plan where whenever I'm trying to discard those cards, either I'm cycling and drawing a card through the cycling ability, or I'm using Anja's ability to get something big into the graveyard, something scary that then I can immediately reanimate or even just get right back into my hand. So it's trying to find something that is sort of baked into the commander, but is just kind of changing the lens, I suppose, about seeing what that commander can do.
I actually kind of want to go back real quick to talking about looking at the bottom of the themes page, because a lot of times in my articles, I'll talk about or like highlight the lowest themes that are going on there. And I would just say, just as a general piece of advice for everybody, like, don't just discount EDH Rec as this thing that just homogenizes the format, because I know that's kind of a criticism. Take a look at some of the stuff that's going on with the themes page. Like, you can find some really wild stuff there. Or the other thing that I really love about using EDH Rec is the advanced filters. So you can set it up so that you can look at a commander's page, and you can generate a commander's page that only uses specific cards. And then kind of see what a deck looks like that or like a look like look at a deck that excludes certain cards. And so like this is actually a really good way to kind of take a look at really unusual things that people are doing out there. I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine about this, and I was talking to him about like, he was thinking about doing Jisa and Garolf, the one where they enter the battlefield, they mill four, and they can cast a zombie from their graveyard once a turn. So he was talking about doing a deck with like Ashes of the Fallen, which is a 2-mana artifact that you name a creature type and your creatures are in your graveyard are that type. So you don't have to play zombies. You can just find Ashes of the Fallen, and Geese and Geralt will let you cast anything in your graveyard.
Oh, that's good. I
And
like
yeah,
that.
and so what you can do is you can find out if other people are doing something like that. So you could filter Geese and Geralt's page to only look for decks that are using Ashes of the Fallen, and maybe get some cool ideas and see what people are up to. Or you know what? If people aren't doing that, then congratulations. You have an extremely hipster deck that you can tell people about.
Yeah, that's honestly where a lot of the fun is, at least for me as a brewer. And I know you definitely agree with me on this one, Lenny, is we like taking some interesting takes on some of these powerful commanders. And that's not just a challenge, but again, we want people to remember. We want them to walk away remembering our silly deck, because just because we're going a little bit off the mainstream trail here doesn't mean our decks are quote unquote bad. We're just trying to take the path less taken and find a slightly different way to play the same commander that we find is potentially more enjoyable than if we just went with EDH rec average.
Yeah. I mean, I know definitely I want to get into a game and just like have somebody be like, wow, that's an amazingly cool deck that you just totally destroyed me with, and I've never seen anything like it.
Honestly, that I think that right there is the highest compliment that I would ever consider as a brewer personally, is changing someone's expectations completely through a single game.
Oh yeah, like I know definitely one of the other ones I've been built I currently have built from my article series is I built the Korvel deck, and that one's got a lot of compliments, and it feels good to even just have people tell me like, wow, that was like a fair Korvel deck that didn't just like explode out the gate and then just like make you feel like I couldn't do anything. Like
Yeah,
I actually got to have a game against that.
let's talk about that. What exactly is your Korvel deck trying to do, and just what makes it different from a standard Storm-like Korvel deck that we typically think of?
So that Korvel deck, I call that Korvold's Tap Dance. And actually, this before we, I'm gonna digress just a little bit here. One of the other reasons why I think people should read my article series is because my husband does an awesome job on making like Photoshops of the commanders. And so the Korvold Tap Dance article has him dressed up like Fred Astaire. So he's got like the flower in the lapel and the top hat and a cane. And it's called the Tap Dance because all of the sacrifice outlets in the deck have to tap. And if something self-sacrifices, it has to tap. And I also decided not to use treasure because treasure in Korvold is kind of it's kind of unfair. So it's kind of a bit of a it ends up being like a little bit of a value sacrifice engine style deck, a little bit of aristocrats, a little bit of plus one counter synergies, and then a little bit of reanimator.
But
So, you know, it just it's seeking to do stuff like either get Mazarek and then just sacrifice stuff and swing with a big team, or like reanimate a triplicate Titan and just get in there for damage.
yeah, so again, just trying to subvert those expectations just by playing some different cards you might not normally see in a Korvold deck, but again, also self-imposing what a lot of people would consider to be a very self-restrictive theme, but one that you can still really work around, especially since you're playing in three colors.
Oh yeah, definitely. Having more colors helps a lot with this kind of stuff because you have like so much more stuff that you can play around with.
Oh, definitely. And obviously some certain color combinations are going to have a lot more leeway than others too, when it
Yeah.
comes to trying to find cards that you're going to want to play in certain themes.
Right. Cough, cough, green, cough, cough.
I don't know. I mean, if you can also build green to have a lot of limitations too.
Oh,
I've
yeah.
definitely tried to do that because again, I know that there's quote unquote staples in green that we could be talking out ad infinitum here, or should I say ad nauseum? Okay, that was a bad joke, but you don't have to use those cards as a brew if you don't want to. I think that's really where we're coming from here with our self-imposed restrictions, is that we're trying to find different ways to build these decks, which doesn't necessarily mean running a lot of staples. We know that we're not going to be running those cards, so we try to find different ways to get the most out of our commander, most out of our 99, that doesn't involve those singular powerful cards. And it's very doable. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that running a self-restrictive theme is a bad thing. This is something where if you've never tried it before, I would highly recommend, highly encourage you to give it a try, because it's really fun and it really challenges you as a deck builder. I'm going to say that Nigila build was more than just, me going through and finding every colorless land in my land box that I could throw into a deck, although it had something to do with that too. But again, it requires you to think ahead about trying to fix your colors in the game. I'm trying to get Wooburg to be able to activate that ability plus just Wooburg. And how many mana rocks do I need to be able to try to get Wooburg at any given time? How many deep do I want to have to go? Because I can't just jam every single Manalith effect into the deck. Obviously, I'm going to run out of those variants long before I run out of mana rock slots. So how many Signets do I want? How many random talismans do I want? How many Manalith effects do I want? And then I'm running all five of the mirror as well, the single tap mirror for two from the Mirrodin block. And making sure that I'm trying to run as many of those kinds of redundant effects as possible so that when I get to the point where I want to be able to activate Nigila's ability, I have the ability to get at least one, maybe two activations off of her every turn to make sure that I'm able to still pressure the board, do the thing, but again, kind of build up to that in a slower way and just see how the board progresses.
Yeah, I think there's also a lot to be said about, honestly, like you're talking about not using staples. So what I would say to that is like a lot of people sort of have this expectation in the game about like everybody is always trying to optimize. Like a lot of people talk about Commander as though that is what everybody is trying to do, and that's what you should be doing. And I really disagree with that mindset. Like stepping away from the staples, it's not just that, like, it's not just that it's a way to build like an unusual different deck, but a lot of the cards that aren't staples that do things that staples do, they still work. I'm still not gonna give cancel a pass because you have a lot of better versions of cancel, but like three mana counter spells will still counter a spell. It just, it might not always like fit perfectly in your curve, and I will say that it's less optimized, but you just kind of can play around that, and I think that's fine. And I think people should be okay with just slightly wanting worse cards. And then the other thing I want to say about like avoiding staples and things like that is it ends up becoming a lot easier to cut that one card in there that always seems to be like your 100 first, 100 second card into the deck. Speaking back to the Korvol deck, Trading Post is one of the best cards in that deck, and it just, does everything. I can pitch a card to reanimate something. I can make a creature to sacrifice to Korvold. I can sacrifice a creature for Korvold and get back an artifact that I had, or draw some extra cards. But like Trading Post, I think is a card that is notorious for being that like 101st, 102nd card that
I
just
don't
gets
know,
cut from
Lenny.
deck.
I love Trading Post personally, so I probably jam it in more decks than I should. But I do agree, it's a lot of value stapled onto one card.
Yeah, and I think it's really good, but I still think like a lot of people just end up cutting it because it doesn't always quite fit their theme,
Sure.
or it's four mana or whatever. And maybe if you just veer away from the staples, you might have some space for it.
Yeah. And again, just trying to go through your bulk bin, find some cards that are a little bit underplayed, undervalued, is not necessarily a bad thing, especially when you're trying to roll back the optimization a little bit, like we have with these decks that we've talked about on this episode already, is we're trying to find homes for cards and for strategies that don't necessarily have a huge home everywhere. but we're taking the challenge upon ourselves to try these cards out, and it gives us the opportunity to open up what I would say is a much larger card pool, honestly. And we can start just looking at, you know, some corner case cards. We're not necessarily trying to flatten our mana curve or try to optimize it. Well, all of a sudden that opens up thousands of potential cards that could go in our decks. And it gives us a whole bunch of different directions that we could go. And if you're necessarily trying to optimize, you might not have the opportunity to do that. And I really think that this is one of the best things about building one of these kinds of commanders in this particular way, is we have the freedom doing this sort of strategy to really just see what cards are out there and try to find some hidden gems that maybe people are sleeping on, or which in our particular strategy just works so well, whereas in a standard deck using that commander, the usual strategy, there's just not going to be room for that. That instead of being the 101st card, that might be something that you just completely skip, or maybe it's the 120th card, let's say, as you're slimming your list down, and you really don't give it a second thought. But in a different version of that deck, that could be the all-star card that really makes things go. And that's the exciting thing.
Yeah. Like, definitely love rocking Turn Into a Pumpkin out of my Urza deck. Like nowhere else we'd be like, why would I bounce a permanent for 4 mana? And I'm just like, yo, this bounces a permanent, this draws me a card, and it makes an artifact, so it ramps me.
Whoa, the value off of that.
Right?
Yeah, those are the kinds of stories that I just love hearing, is play some random card that people have never heard before or have never seen in that sort of deck, and just watch their expression or listen to their expression if you're playing over webcam, and just hear that jaw drop as it hits the floor. That right, oh, yeah. There is kind of that's the moment where you know you've done a pretty good thing.
Yeah. Speaking back to what you were saying about like specific strategies too, they definitely enable a lot of strategies that I think don't have support. My latest article was a Kalamax deck, which was a Teemer energy deck, which basically the deck is trying to, you know, mass a ton of energy. And I know a lot of people have talked about like that, you know, that they want to do an energy deck, but there's no energy commander. And so I ended up building this thing where it's about using blink spells, like say Siren's Ruse or something, which blinks a creature, and then you blink an energy creature, and then Kalamax can copy that. And so you can blink another energy creature, and then like you start adding to your energy. And then you can spend it into things like, say, Aetherworks Marvel, which will cast a spell. So if you find an instant and it's the first one you cast, Kalamax will find that too. And so, like, it's a commander. There is an energy theme way at the bottom of EDH Rec's theme page, way down there. Like, not a lot of people are doing this because they just, you know, it was in one set. It never got a lot of support. But I think having a really strong commander like that just kind of gives it the push to actually go into a few more pods.
So, sorry, I wasn't recording. So, is it fair to say, Lenny, that in some ways, if there is a certain strategy out there that doesn't necessarily have a dedicated commander, that you can basically build it anyways around just a fairly good, generically good commander, and it'll still end up being just fine, just like with energy?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Some of my non-article personal decks kind of were like that. Like, I still have an Abzan Enchantress deck, and there's no Abzan Enchantress commander, and for a while I was running Golos, but, well, you know.
Yeah, that happened.
And so now it's like I'm running Timna the Weaver and Kodama, and that one is actually one of my most powerful decks. I don't play that one very often, unfortunately, because I love it.
Yeah, Kodama's pretty good.
Yeah, Kodama is a ridiculous magic card, and I feel like eventually I'm gonna have to write an article on that one. But, you know, it's I wanted that deck to sit at a certain power level, at a high power level. And so, like, you know, there is no commander that's Abzan that says, hey, do stuff with enchantments like they've done for Bant. So I can just take these really powerful commanders and just kind of find other ways to synergize with them and make a good deck. And so that's just, I think, yeah, a whole other way of looking at like giving these really powerful cards a home in the format, outside of being the, as Commander Cookout podcast calls them, boogeymanders.
Nice. Yeah. I feel like with every time we get a new set that, you know, when you get a certain commander coming out that does something different that we've never seen before, you know, people are always either really on board that, oh, hey, this makes X strategy very viable, or boo, this doesn't help the problem that we don't have an immediate payoff. And I guess what we're trying to say, and what you're going on about here, Lenny, is you don't have to have a commander that basically says, play this, gain extreme amounts of value. Sometimes you might have to work a little bit harder, maybe color shift your strategy, or, you know, as what you're trying to do there, find something you can do with generically powerful commanders that is a little bit outside the purview of how most people play there with those two commanders. And just kind of make it up on your own, make it happen. Instead of constantly waiting, and in some cases whining about not getting a particular color combination or a particular commander you want, sometimes you just have to make it happen. And I think that's one of those things that people kind of forget sometimes, is no one's stopping you from trying to come up with some strategy or some make something fairly viable. You just don't always have to have the exact commander that basically says, play a land, gain oodles of life, draw a million cards, you know? Sometimes just get in there, just do it, honestly, and you'll be surprised with how that'll go.
Yeah, I agree. I think there is kind of this expectation that for Wizards to make at some point make a deck viable for you by printing a commander that I mean that just is a roadmap to you wanted this, do that. And it's like they do kind of feed into that expectation, I think, a bit more than I would like. But I don't think that's necessarily wrong. It's tough to say. It's like not everybody has to be a brewer, and that's fine. We can have people that like can just look at a list somewhere and say, okay, that's what I want to play, and they just want to play, and those people are welcome and valid in the community. But I think I don't like too much of like Commander 2018. It for that's an example, at least for me, is there's a lot of commanders that are like just do this. This is the roadmap. It says Madness on here. Play Madness cards. Or it says Morph. Play Morph cards. And then it's hard for them to be other stuff. And I mean, kind of, I come from like a little bit before the EDH pre-cons, the first ones, where that was kind of like almost how everybody was building in a lot of ways. Because like Wizards wasn't designing for Commander as much, or really at all, until they started with, you know, those. And so like you just kind of had to put together whatever deck came to mind with what commanders were available, and there wasn't like there weren't so many commanders that were roadmap commanders to what you want to do. And I don't know, I think we kind of lose something when we have too much of that. It gives there's not as much space for people to find something and say, you know, to discover something with a particular commander. But even though there's not as much of it, it's still possible even now.
Sure, and you're right. I'm not trying to villainize playing a very, what I would consider obvious commander to do a certain thing. I do have plenty of decks where I do try to channel a lot of what the deck is trying to do through that commander. My Sithis deck, for instance, I still wanted to play a whole bunch of enchantments, draw cards, gain life, do powerful things. But even when you do that sort of thing, there is what we're trying to do, I think, here is encourage you to maybe try to think of some different cards. Maybe if you feel like you're stuck in a rut with your EDH building or with your decks, maybe try putting in some different cards, you know, that still fit that theme. Just mix it up a little bit. Maybe try to find a different take on the exact theme that you're doing. So like even with my Sithis deck, yes, I'm playing a lot of what we consider quote unquote staples. enchantments, but also I run a very interesting package of other cards that are enchantments, but are not necessarily trying to do just busted generic enchantment things. They're kind of in there because they fit that my jank brewer mindset, and they synergize well with the commander, yes, but they also provide that same kind of, I guess, shock value that Nigella does for me as well. Just like those cards that people have never seen before or have really never seen in that context before. And it just creates that conversation and allows me to just kind of tinker with that deck, never really quite be satisfied with exactly where it is, try some different things, and you never really know where you're going to end up. So even in with those kinds of decks, there's always room for just playing around with trying some new things. And just, I guess my advice here is just never be too afraid to just try something out. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But you never know until you try.
Yeah, very good advice. I would also say for people like looking to do stuff like that, I think it's good to try to figure out distilling down the things a commander is doing in the command zone to find other ideas. One that I think really of my own articles that exemplifies this is I have a Xur life swap deck. So shout out to Coach J-Ro with the Selenia Dark Angel.
I've talked about that episode with him a long time ago on the podcast when he and I were comparing our own Selenia lists and how his is very different than mine. And just how you can take the two people can take the same commander and do completely different things with it while still just having a lot of fun playing that deck. So just more proof that you don't necessarily have to follow the beaten path to have a really good deck that you enjoy playing.
Oh, yeah. So, like, for this Xur deck, I was figuring out what to do, and the idea came to me because it just was like, okay, Xur searches out a 3-mana enchantment, and just kind of flipping through for, like, ideas by just looking at those. And so I have this whole Xur the Enchanter life swap deck that's built off of this card called Soul Channeling, which is a 3-mana enchantment that is just pay 2 life, regenerate enchanted creature. And so, you know, it's just like that kind of came to me thinking about the Selenia decks and stuff of I could just build this whole thing around that. But it's looking at Xur as like, okay, it's a tutor in the command zone and it's building the deck around what I find. And so I think that's a good way to look at it. My advice to anybody trying to do something like this is to really just almost meditate on a commander and really distill down what they're actually doing. Not necessarily like what they're telling you to do, although I guess Xur is kind of telling you get a 3-mana enchantment, but you know, it's all about like what you're doing. Or I have another one, which is my personal favorite art from my husband, was a Grand Arbiter deck, which he did a picture of Grand Arbiter Augustine driving an Aston Martin and holding an Uzi. And it's just a straight up beatdown deck. And it's like a lot of people go and focus on this part of Grand Arbiter Augustine the Fourth where it's about taxing your opponents. And so that is kind of the roadmap that people have. But like you could also focus on the fact that he's a cost reduction.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can just look at, this is kind of based off of my Linvala Shield of Seagate deck, but you can, with Grand Arbiter, you can reduce, like, the cost on all of these huge flying beaters that have just, like, you know, dominated, like, every control finisher from the blue-white control from the past. So, like, yeah, okay, I could make people pay, like, 10 mana to cast a spell, or I could drop out like a 4 mana Meadowmai or a 5 mana Drogskull Reaver and just beat people down like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's pretty much all I got to say on that.
Hey, I mean, that sounds really awesome, actually, is that sometimes what I've come to realize as a brewer who tries to do something very similar here is that you just have to take risks sometimes. And it's really going to depend on exactly what you're trying to do. You don't have to necessarily take the risks, and that's okay. If you want to build around the commander in the way that feels the most natural, definitely go ahead and do that. I think where we're trying to come at here is if you want to maybe expand your deck building, if you want to try a challenge, always try, you know, never discount necessarily trying a different strategy with a certain commander, because you're never quite sure what will happen. And again, I've had decks that have just kind of fallen apart because I had a theme, I really wanted to follow that theme, and then I just realized, you know, this is not going to work. It happens. That's the curse of everyone who's ever been creative before, is you're going to have ideas that just go absolutely nowhere and crash and burn. But really, the ethos of the of what we're trying to talk about here, of this sort of brewing style, is that just don't be afraid to try something. Try to find a little bit of a different way in. It's everything is there at your disposal. There are so many resources, so many great people out there to talk to, and you're going to get inspiration from so many different places. And you got to try. I know I've harped on this a lot, but at some point, the best time to start trying this is now. Is to, you know, just give it a try. It might not work, but does it have to work necessarily? I think the idea is you're just getting out there, you're trying something different, and that's really where the fun comes in, is trying to find your style as a brewer.
Yeah, it is absolutely okay to fail at that. And I think just, you know, be upfront and be willing to admit that. Yes, sometimes you will come up with an idea, and not only sometimes will it crash and burn, but it might also, like, if you're trying to provide an experience that's like a bit more casual, sometimes you can just screw that up and you will maybe also provide a bad experience. I know actually from, this was my second article in this series, and I think maybe the deck that I built was going a little too far with Turgrid Group Hug.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people were very much feeling like that. It was just not a thing that was going to work out. I still kind of technically want to try it out one day, but it, you know, it still does the Turgrid thing, even though I'm feeding people cards. It doesn't really change the fact that people don't like having their stuff stolen. They just don't.
Yeah. But
yeah, but
again, you don't know until you try on some of these cases. That
absolutely.
These ideas just come from wanting to try to stand out and create that conversation. If there's anything that you out there are going to hopefully take away from this conversation that we're having here today, it's that don't be afraid to try something new, and, you know, don't be afraid to fail. Because Lenny and I have had plenty of decks that have not really gone where we want them to for each one that we have talked about on the show here today. But we stick with these decks and we enjoy playing with them because they not only bring us joy as a brewer, but they start that conversation and they really speak to the social tenets of EDH as a format, because we are able to challenge the assumptions, challenge the stats in some ways, and just try to take the road less traveled. And I personally just really enjoy trying to be different. I always like being a little different, a little weird. And I hope that my decks try to reflect that in their own unique way.
Yeah, I guess the other thing we can talk about is that you can also, if you're looking for like a winning edge, you can still surprise people with that. Because also, don't be afraid to win. Like your idea should still win, even if it's off the beaten path. And sure. At least for me personally, I like losing in ways that I haven't seen before, and I think there's a lot of Commander players that do like to see that. They want to have their moments and they still want to play, but a lot of people also like losing to a cool deck. That doesn't feel as bad as, like, you know, it doesn't feel bad like being overpowered feels bad.
Mm-hmm. Nothing like the first time I lost to a Selenia deck, right? And the first time I'd ever seen the card. And so when it came time for me to build my Selenia deck, I remembered how that went. I looked at EDH Rec and thought, you know, a lot of people are trying to do this exact strategy I've seen before. I'm going to try to turn that on its head. And all of a sudden, voila, my Selenia deck is born. I love playing that deck. And it while it does try to mess with my life total, it's nowhere near the same as what J-Rose's version is doing. And we had a great conversation just talking about how our two decks were doing completely different things, but we just love our own decks for what they're doing. And there's just so much room for interpretation with a commander that honestly doesn't have a lot of text on in the box that, you know, seems to make it a really good commander. It has very few relevant abilities, but you can take it in so many different ways now. And there's just so many creative people out there, and hopefully everyone listening out there has that itch to try to brew a new deck. Hopefully we are inspiring you today when you're listening, after you've listened to this episode, after you go home, you look through your collection, we're trying to inspire you to maybe, you know, challenge the ways that you try to brew and maybe try to build a silly janky deck that takes one of these commanders that has that loudness factor, that has that it factor, and maybe try to put a personal spin on there that people have never seen before. And just I feel like that's really the fun in it for me, is just trying to break new ground, trying to go to interesting new frontiers of the format, and just, you know, try to not only have fun in the game, but just have fun thinking about the game and brewing for the game, because just that's the creative itch that really keeps me inspired and keeps me coming back to this game.
You know, I feel exactly the same way. I really like the vibe you're bringing here about that. It's about taking something that's kind of reviled and honestly using it in like a way that brings joy to you and also brings joy to the people that you're playing with. And I think that's really like what it's all about. It's winning is great and it's fun, but I think ultimately, at least for me, it's kind of secondary. It is about getting together and sharing your love and your joy of the game and sharing the love and joy of what you put together or just what you enjoy playing with other people. And so, yeah, I'd say, like, don't be afraid to do that. Like, if you really love a particular commander, no matter what other people think of it, you know, you should just build it, play it, find a fun way to do it, or, you know, find the average way, whatever brings you joy, just bring it to yourself, bring it to your life, bring it to other people.
And again, always know that rule zero is your friend. And if you feel like anyone may have a problem with it, you try to work that out in rule zero. Again, I don't know if I'll ever rebuild that Kess deck, but I've changed a lot since then. But I've basically filled that with some of these other commanders. And I've really had a whole lot more fun building Najeela, building Anja, building just even a one-time off Derevi Angel tribal deck for those charity games J-Ro had a few months ago on his stream. Just trying to take these powerful commanders and trying something new. And, you know, just don't be afraid to try to do that. But again, if you want to build them exactly how most people consider them, if you want to do that, that's completely fine. That's what Rule Zero is for. Just make sure that everyone has a good time. And if you're doing something kind of silly, like with Najeela or with Urza, as we've talked about in this episode, just make that up front, make that known. And if people are really not vibing with that, there's nothing wrong with going and changing to a deck that's not necessarily trying to do that. That's why we build a lot of decks, honestly. And so again, really what we're trying to say is rule zero is your friend. Always remember to use that, and hopefully then you'll be able to have a great time playing an awesome game with awesome people.
Yeah, I agreed wholeheartedly, 100%.
All right. So again, Lenny, we've had an awesome conversation here today. Thank you so much for being on here. It's been way too long since I first asked you if you could be on the show. So I'm glad that we are finally able to chat.
Oh yeah, likewise. I know it's I can be difficult to schedule, but it was a pleasure, and thank you for the opportunity to chat with you. And then hopefully we get some more games again.
Definitely. We definitely need to have a rematch with Urza versus Najeela at some point. So to book that for some point in the near future here. Holidays are kind of difficult, but we'll get that in at some point.
Okay, I got a friend with a Narset Burn deck that I'll reach out to.
Oh, I gotta see that. So
Yeah, it's the one from my article series. So he built it
nice.
because he liked it so much. So
Nice.
we'll set that up.
Sounds good. And again, where can people find, if they're interested in learning more about your content series or your work with the Scrap Trawlers, where can people find that content?
Right. You can find my EDH or my series Power Sync on edhrec.com. I am going to have a new one up Thursday or sometime around Thursday next week. You can find my me playing Budget Brew EDH with the Scrap Trawlers on the Scrap Trawlers U Twitch channel. And they also have a YouTube channel now that I think about it. So you can find that there. They make tweets on at Scrap Trawlers. I think it's at Scrap Trawlers. I'm gonna
I think so,
Andy's
yeah.
gonna come after me for this. You can find me on Twitter at Lenny Woolley, Lenny Woolley. Occasionally posting, retweeting some comments, and maybe making a silly joke about my husband and my life with him. And then, as mentioned earlier, you can find me playing Dungeons and Dragons in the Wrath and Prophecy Theros game with Sage of Fables, Claybee from CNC Power Hour, Callahan from the Mind Sculptors, and Mono White Guy Charles from Mind Sculptors as well. First Monday of every month, and the VODs are on the Mind Sculptors YouTube channel. Great game, a lot of fun. So yeah, that's all of the many places that you can find me. Oh, also, I'm probably lurking in like whatever Discord that you're in because I have an absurd number of Discord servers that I exist in. So you could just at a Johnny's Gay Pride Mate and you'll probably find me.
Yeah, that's kind of the curse of content creators like us, is that we're in way too many Discords to be healthy, honestly.
Yeah. I've just given up, but at me and eventually I will find you.
All right, sounds good. And if you're interested in finding me on Twitter, you can find me at MTG in quarantine. If you found the really happy looking Umog wearing a pair of headphones, you found the right place. You can also find the entire back catalog of the MTG in quarantine podcast on the usual podcast outlets. That's Google, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rocket Cast, Downcast. Again, I always forget so many. I always remember just a few of them or none of them. So, if most podcast outlets, you'll probably be able to find me on there. Definitely go check some of those out. Check out some of the recommendations that I've given throughout this episode, as well as definitely make sure to check out the times where Charles Mono White Guy was also on the Planeswalkers series here on the podcast too. Those are great conversations talking about Mono White specifically. They make for great conversations. So if you're interested in learning more about that, definitely check those out. I'd also like, before we end here, to give another huge shout out and thank you to the awesome people who've supported me over at patreon.com/mtginquarantine. So another huge thank you to Mr. Big Bence, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S, Infamous Fridge, and my newest patron, Frugal Brutal, for supporting me. If you'd like to help support me and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information. And I hope that you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.